Juan, where are your parents from?
My parents, my mother was born in America. Her father came from China, Canton, China. And he came over as a merchant, and because he was a scholar, so he came in a time of where all the workers were. And he was a Hwang, and he founded, or he was one of the people that helped found the Hwang. At least I know he became one of the Hwang Family Association officials.
Where did he settle in the States?
He settled in San Francisco. Uh-huh. That's where my mother was born.
Uh-huh.
And on my father's side, my father came a little later, and that is after there was a certain amount of Chinese workers over here, and he was a doctor, so he came over. As you know, the Chinese in those days, in the late 1800s, still believe in Chinese medicine, very much so, you know. And so he came over that period, and he met my mother, and they got married.
And he was a Chinese herbalist?
Chinese herbalist, that's right.
Uh-huh.
But since because he was a young man, and he also went into a certain amount of Western concept of medicine. His basic structure was an herbalist.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember roughly when he came to the States?
That I don't know. Now, he was much older than my mother. And we had a very large family. There were 10 children born. And now, however, the Chinese number, according to, they honor every conception, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But only 10 lived, you see. But it number up to 13. Yes. And 6 boys and 4 girls.
Uh-huh. So your father settled in San Francisco?
In San Francisco, correct.
Uh-huh. Okay. What brought them to Los Angeles?
Never came to Los Angeles.
So you were born in?
Born in Oakland. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was born after the San Francisco earthquake and fire.
So you were born 19?
In late 1908, December.
Uh-huh.
So, and 1906 was the San Francisco fire.
Mm-hmm. Which part of Canton were your parents from?
They were from Nanhoi, which is a section that is in Canton, you know, the surrounding area of Canton. And in Nanhoi area would be Gaoguang, which is called Sangyapo.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, we speak, although my father speaks the Gaoguang language or dialect, but basically that's how we learn.
So what did your father do in San Francisco? Did he work did he open up his own herbal shop?
No, he didn't. He was a functioning doctor. He did have a hand in starting the Chinese hospital. Pause a moment, I want to show you that picture.
So in that picture you just showed me, your father was working for the
No, he didn't work there. He donated his services. Because prior to that, you see each section of a province, not province, or counties,
mm-hmm.
you might say,
mm-hmm.
had their own people.
Mm-hmm.
And for the people who were needy,
mm-hmm.
and he donated his service to the needy people. There used to be a Samyakbulgun, and where all the single men, they would live in this one area, you know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
it didn't, for those that didn't work and for the aged. And then if we're sick, and they would go and take care of them, do you know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
they didn't have any it was a form of Chinese welfare in those days in taking care of the elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
And my father did that.
What did he do with his time besides that?
Besides that, he has his own
practice. Around to see patients?
Oh, well, the patients come to him. He has an office because you know the Chinese system. Unless they were very ill, and that's when he would go up to the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was feeling the pulse.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Where was his office?
His office was on Grand Avenue. And I would say between Jackson and Washington. I remember you go up one flight of stairs and it's at the head of the stair. And then he has this
Mm-hmm. So, until he passed away, he worked his whole life in the States as an herbalist.
Oh,
as
yes.
A doctor.
Yes, right. Basically.
Mm-hmm. And how about your mother? Did she work?
My mother, no. My mother, you can see in her other picture that I show you,
mm-hmm.
with the family picture. Because she came from, in those days, you know, the learned people, the people who are scholars, you know, which was her father, and they emphasize even to the fact that you see her, even though she was born in America, and you saw her with a bound foot, and they had even servants and all that. And I remember her telling us that when she got married, she had the young Muijai. The handmaidens,
mm-hmm.
and also an elderly woman that came with her. Evidently, my grandfather was well-to-do in those days,
mm-hmm.
and so therefore, I mean, she was a scholarly lady. That's where I learned how we learn all the Chinese in the beginning, because when we were young, we had that sort of a training, and she was.
Would she teach you at home?
I would say she talked to us and that, but later on we had tutors, Chinese tutors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your mother didn't work?
No. She couldn't possibly work. You all still remember
children.
How when after the fall of the Qing Dynasty, she unbound the feet, like my auntie and my mother, and they were very much pro the new world. Because they were the scholarly people, so they can read and see what was going on, and particularly like the freedom of the female sex, etc.
Mm-hmm.
However, my grandmother, particularly, cling very much and very closely to the old ways of life, and she was quite dominant in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you, I was reading Dream of the Red Chamber, you know. How much they were the matriarch business,
mm-hmm.
was very dominant.
Mm-hmm. How much Chinese did you study?
Oh, I studied a great deal. We did. I mean, the oldest one. I think it stopped after me a little bit because by 2 years old, 3 years old. Actually, it's round two because I was born in December of 1908. And in 1911, the Republic of China was established. But then, at that time, the teachers were of the old school, you know, that never made it to become a high official in China. And they were, I think he was a Cao Choi or Goyan, you know, that
mm-hmm.
came to America. And they taught us all the classics of Gu Wen, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
and Meng Zi Zhao, you know, all
mm-hmm.
that stuff.
Mm-hmm. How many years of tutoring?
Oh, we stayed with it through high school, all the way to 1927, at least.
So you started around 5 or 6, or?
Oh, yes, just about 5 or 6. During between 5 and 6, by that time, my mother had taught us almost the majority of the Tang Shi, you know, and we could memorized and recited mm-hmm. by memory, you know. Mm-hmm. Although we didn't know much what was going on, only just some, it was nice sing-songy. Instead of Chinese songs, I would say,
uh-huh.
that we have that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That took the place of like nursery rhymes, etc.
So what languages were spoken in the home?
Oh, that was Cantonese.
Cantonese.
Yeah, Cantonese.
Uh-huh. Was that strictly...
Strictly,
enforced
yeah.
by your parents, or was it?
Oh, very much so, because my grandmother, I mean, in due respect to her, we were not allowed to speak one word of English. Of course, naturally, when you come home from school and then you have school talk amongst your brothers, you know, and we would be fine if we speak English in front of her, because she doesn't understand English. And so we were given an allowance. The pennies, or I remember putting nickels in a jar because we spoke English in front of the of grandma.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How about outside the home? What
outside of the home, with the... I was a curious one, and I started befriending, particularly in about maybe the sixth grade, seventh grade, and so forth. I mean, sitting next to me were the Occidental people, you know, and I was curious about them. I always have been curious, and I always questioned them, and then I even have friends, you see. So I remember one of them was a Jewish one named Horowitz, and then the other one that sat right in back of me was Harold I, and his father, I think I was, it was a German, either a German name or Nordic name. He was a blonde chap. He looked so different from us, you know, and he was friendly with me. I remember going on hiking tours with him.
So you mainly spoke English?
English with them
then,
yeah, yes,
uh-huh.
right.
Uh-huh.
That is with them, but if it were with the Chinese schoolmates, then we would always speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents know English?
My father did. My mother didn't learn until after the 1906 fire. When they moved to Oakland, you see. That's when they were in my... I'm number seven in the family, in the order. And my sixth brother was born in 1906, right before the fire. And then they all got onto a boat. I remember they said they would cut all whatever belongings they have into a cattle boat, and went over to Oakland, and then we lived there. And after about a couple of years, I was born. And during that time, I think the missionary ladies came around, you know, and talked to my mother and teach her English, and my aunt English, and all the ladies in the house, so I believe, including my aunt, my grandmother. And I believe they spoke some. And that's how I was named Victor, because she was I remember that they call her Miss Jenny, I mean the missionary lady that taught her English, was telling her about Victor Hugo. And so I was named after Victor Hugo.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Miss Jenny well,
uh-huh.
because I think I was first born there. And then they would come and visit them. I don't know how often, maybe several days a week, you see. And I even remember going to Miss Jenny's home, because she has a mother, and she had this high knitted lace thing that up to her neck. And she was old fashioned, had a bustle,
mm.
and the thing. I mean, I'm visual minded, as you can see that later on, how I get interested in all things visual.
Mm-hmm.
And even my business is a television, is a visual medium.
Right. Okay, where are the places where you have lived?
We didn't do much moving. We lived in, I was born on Fifth Street, that I remember. And then we moved over to another larger house, also on Fifth Street. And
this is in San Francisco?
In Oakland.
In Oakland.
Yeah. From then on, I mean, after they left San Francisco in 1906, They never moved back to San Francisco. They lived in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And on Fifth Street, and I remember we would also go to by that time they also introduced us to Sunday school and things like that. And the interesting thing was that we went to many, many different Sunday schools. And I remember my father and my mother said how different they were, even though they were in the name of Christ, and how they were much against each other. It was the organization that was wrong. However, Christ in itself was
mm-hmm.
was loving to your neighbor and all that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a good idea about groups of people and organizations, how they can be. We have an overview of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on Sixth Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they too were beginning to have Chinese schools. I remember visiting some friends, well, some of the friends on our same street would go to their Chinese school, but they were no way in comparison to learning Chinese as
mm-hmm.
we did, you see, because they were simpler
mm-hmm.
and not exacting like the Lao Shi, you know, the tutors that we had. I mean, they were very strict.
So after 6th Street?
Oh, after 6th, no, after 5th Street.
5th Street.
Then we lived there until my father passed away
mm-hmm.
in the 20s. And then we move up to 8th Street. And I beg your pardon, it wasn't 8th Street, it was 9th Street. And we stayed on 9th Street. We just moved once more on 9th Street, all the way up to when I graduated high school in 27.
Mm-hmm.
And then during that time, my father had interest in an importing-exporting concern in San Francisco. And after that, oh, also, by the way, I must say that in the old ways of thinking is that you go out and learn business, you know. That's why my father had all kinds of business in meat markets and so forth. And the one that we usually visit was the importing exporting concern, because it had contacts with the name was Him Sung Chu, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they import foodstuff and porcelains and all kinds of Chinese things. And one of the biggest business in those days was, I remember, the firecracker business in July 4th, 4th July 4th. And they import to Mexico, import to Cuba, and they had dresses like in Madagascar and Australia, New Zealand, you know. And because we knew English, and we would go over and we would type envelopes for the billing to these various places. So I continue going, visiting the, like this in learning business in over there until 1928, a group of Chinese actors, actually they start having troops of traveling Chinese Cantonese actors from China in 1925 on. We would, our environment would, I would say, alternate between going to the Saturday morning movies of, not Hoplong Cassidy, I mean, what is his name? Well, a famous cowboy. But Hoplong Cassidy was along there somewhere. And also they had mystery stories, you see. Oh, and Pearl White, I think those were the first one. And so we would do that on Saturday, talk with our schoolmates about that. And then on other days, we would go over to San Francisco and see the Chinese operas. And we would talk about that with our family or with other Chinese people who goes there. And to the degree that by that time, the Chinese instrument, the Yuancom, was very popular, and they bought one for me, and I took to it pretty readily. to the degree that around in 1928, I mean, I did fairly well because I imitated one of the well-known ones at that time. And I appeared on stage. I mean, because, oh, when I played it for the people, which was totally Hong Kong people, Chinese people, not Hong Kong alone, Cantonese too, because they came from Canton. We had two branches, a branch in Canton's, it was Him Sung Fat. And the branch of the store, the importing store in Hong Kong was Him Sung Lo and Him Sung Cho in San Francisco. So my brother, also my oldest brother, went back there. Under my father's will, he said that the son would go and inspect these stores. You know. So the two older brothers did go to China. My oldest brother, and also my number six brother, the one that was born in. And of course, came my turn. It was, by that time, it was something else, you know. I mean, some of the store didn't do too well, and I think there were little shenanigans going there, and the one in Canton, because of the fact that the Japanese period, and it just went down and down until the whole thing just went. And it was during, before that happened in Him Sung Cho, where this troupe of actors and singers from Canton, from Hong Kong, Canton, Hong Kong actually, came over, and he was very popular. Bak Kru Wing was his name. And his records, those records were selling at that time $3 or $4 each, you know. And one day while I was at the store, I said to my dad, I said, how come, not to my uncle who was running the store in San Francisco, I said, how come we don't record that fellow here? Because the records made here in America were selling for anywhere from 35 cents to 75 cents tops. And Red Seal Records, the Victor record, were selling maybe $1 at the most, you see. And I found out why they were selling so expensive, because those records made in China were made by Becker Records, a German firm. And the record, the recording had been done in Hong Kong, sent to Germany to process and press, and then sent back to Hong Kong, and then again sent to San Francisco for sale. That's why it cost so much money. And we did do that. We started a company there. Called Yun Dong Gong Si, Far East Record Company.
In Hong Kong?
No, in San Francisco.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but with what would be all linked with the three firms, you see, because, you know, the three firms are the basis of it. And so my mother put a lot of money into it. So, and I did the announcement. The record, Chinese record, instead of just starting up with the music, you would say such and such a company presents. So I was a voice on that record. So what happened is the record business went very well. I mean, the contract that I had them, I took them around, because none of them really speak English at the store. And I took them around to the various companies. I contacted Brunswick, and I contacted Columbia Records and Victor Records, Star Records, and Jeanette Records. Those were the American records in those days, companies, I should say. And finally, we made a deal with Brunswick. I mean, the contract was for that we must buy 3,000 records a year, and at 37 cents a piece, you see. You can imagine the profit we would make if we sell it back at the $3-$4, or maybe even $1 less, $3, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, it took hold so well in China and Canton and San Francisco and all the various little stores down the line. We ordered, the first year was 100,000 records. then after the first year, immediately Brunswick canceled our contract. Unfortunately, when we signed the contract with them, we didn't have that escape clause, and I didn't know enough law so that happened. And what they did, they went back to China themselves and recorded. And within the 1 year after the success of our initial company, there were 17 firms in China recording. So after that, I mean, I decided that I better learn how to do it. About that time, the Japanese were invading northeast China, you see. And the Japanese were really giving trouble, and I think even in Shantung, the Germans were giving trouble. And the Columbia went over to Shanghai, and they were giving started a firm there. So I went to McGregor. He broke away because he was out of the 37 cents. He was supposed to have 4 cents per record because it was a business that he initiated, you see. Because the other company was so short-sighted and have this racism. I can feel it, everyone. And this was the only one. And that's because he was a Canadian, Mr. McGregor, and a Scotsman. And he feels that too, even though he was a Canadian. And so he was the only one that would agree to do it. And he started his own recording company. And about that time, too, radio came into being. And so I joined forces with him to learn the art of recording. So, because I had to work in the daytime for him, and the fact that to learn certain things, particularly the technical end of it, and he was doing a thriving business in recording music because he also recorded for Columbia because they didn't have studios, you see, and he opened the studio in San Francisco on Mission Street called McGregor and Sally, and by that time they were recording with the electrical way of recording, because prior to it, that was recording through the wax. That's an old-fashioned method. And I worked there. And beside recording these sessions, he had ample time. You see, there was San Francisco was very much of a union town, as you know. So the musicians would only work for only 3 hours limit. And anything beyond that would be so I found that I had to quickly school myself into the business of learning the American music, because you have the Reed's course, and so that's when I went over to UC Cal to try to learn harmony and all that. And because I was working, I cannot do too much, but I somehow, through the company, they would allow me that they taught them into accepting me as like a visiting student without the grades and all that, because I don't attend full time. And I learned harmony and learned musicianship and learned how a band works, because I have to place microphones for them, etc. And about this time, the soap operas flourished very much. NBC up there was doing very well.
We're talking about what time now? What years?
Now this is in the 28, 29, 20, 30s, the early 30s. Because I went to work for McGregor on 1929, right after the crash, you see. And this being a new business, the crash didn't affect them at all. And there was one very famous serial going on NBC called I Love a Mystery, and also two of them by the same author. And for life me, I just can't think of his name right off that. and also the other was One Man's Family. It was a soap opera, you know, his serial. And they go on 5 days a week. And therefore, I mean, it behooves me. Oh, and I was, beside doing the music thing, which every now and then, you see, maybe once a week or maybe two or three times a week. But the rest of the time, the studio is idle. So what they do is to use it for recording what they call radio transcriptions. Mm-hmm. In other words, this is a large disc, 16 inch, and the speed is slowed down. And so that you can have 15 minutes worth of